Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that, honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. October 13th, 2017, Atlanta, Georgia. 24-year-old Lamora Williams called 911, claiming to have returned home from work to find her two sons dead, that the children's babysitter was missing. A medical examiner later determined the boys had been burnt to death in a tipped-over oven found in the family home. This is Keontae and Jakarta's story.
Lamora Williams stood silent in front of a judge Monday, accused of murdering her own two children and leaving them in an oven. She stared at a prosecutor as he read the 14 charges against her, including two counts of murder. A grand jury indicted the 24-year-old mother last month for the deaths of her two-year-old and one-year-old sons, Keontae and Jakarta. Police found the two boys in an oven October 13th in Williams' apartment in southwest Atlanta. Her family members told us at the time that Williams felt overwhelmed as a single mother of four.
When I saw that mugshot of her, I knew that was not my little sister.
Police say Williams first said a caregiver was watching the boys at the time of their deaths, but police later ruled that out. Williams pleaded not guilty Monday through her attorney to four of the 14 charges. The other charges, including murder, will be addressed at a separate hearing. At the time of her arrest, her family was concerned how long she would last in jail.
I just came from the jailhouse to let them know to put her on suicide watch because she's going to kill herself.
Lamora Williams was born June 24, 1993, in Atlanta, Georgia, to mother Brenda Williams. Williams has a sister, Tabitha. Williams' family would later state Williams had a long history of mental health struggles. She was developmentally slow, with Brenda removing her daughter from school to homeschool her. Williams was also showing some troubling behaviour as far as they were concerned. For example, she would cut off the heads from Tabitha's Barbie dolls. And honestly, that on its own is not much as a red flag. My sister would give my Barbies buzz cuts, and I would cut off the feet of hers, which my poor mother would try to bandage back on. But I imagine that in the grand scheme of things, if this person goes on to do more damaging acts or violent acts, then this could be taken as an early sign that something was wrong. Tabitha would go on to say that Williams' mental health conditions went undiagnosed for many years. Apparently, Brenda tried to seek out help for her daughter, but these pleas fell on deaf ears. And this was another reason why Brenda pulled Williams out of school. Lamora Williams had her first child at age 18, a little girl she would call London. The relationship with this child's father not working out, so Williams moved back in with her mother, Brenda. London's father's family helped to take care of the child. Apparently, Williams and the father had a great co-parenting agreement with shared custody. London was actually with her father at the time this story takes place. Williams then started dating Jamil Penn, a man she met through mutual friends. And initially, they had a great relationship. Jamil would later speak of those early days and would say Williams was positive and full of life, that there was no suggestion of mental health struggles. But as with any new relationship, we always show the best version of ourselves when we first start dating someone. Jamil and Williams had their first child together in 2013, a little boy, Jamil Penn Jr. They got an apartment together, and the family starts to live their life as one. However, their happy love bubble bursts on August 14, 2014, when Jamil finds Williams' father's body in bed after he failed to turn up for a breakfast event. He had had a heart attack. Williams' family would later state this would be the catalyst for Williams' mental health to quickly deteriorate. Williams would also have her third child around this time, Keontae Penn, and this would have only further affected Williams' emotional state, with the hormonal changes and lack of sleep. Having an entire other person completely reliant on you when you can barely keep yourself together. Adding on to that very quickly, Jamil and Williams would welcome their third child, Williams' fourth, Jakarta Williams, in early 2016. Whether it was the deep depression Williams was suffering from, the grief, or having 3 children in 3 years, or possibly a combination of everything. But Jamil and Williams would end their relationship in 2017. But even though their relationship didn't work out, Jamil was dedicated to supporting Williams as much as he could, to be there for the kids and her. Jamil was a great dad and his boys adored him. Jamil moves out of the family home, leaving Williams and their sons in the Oakland City apartment. But Brenda was actually worried about this decision. She was worried that her daughter would not be able to care for these children on her own. Quote, "I told Jamil when he left, something tragic was going to happen. She's going to do something to those kids. She's going to do something to herself." Unquote. Brenda contacted the Division of Family and Children's Services, or DFCS as we'll refer to them throughout this episode. But Brenda contacted DFCS because she was worried about her daughter's mental health, alleging that Williams was so neglectful that sometimes she wouldn't even feed the children. Williams' sister, Tabitha Hollingworth, would also make her reports. She repeated Brenda's concerns, but added that Williams frequently left the toddler's home unattended. Tabitha spoke about how poorly Williams was struggling being a mother, that she had previously attempted suicide, but DFCS failed to do anything to ensure the children's safeguarding. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors. October 13, 2017. Williams called a close friend, Nisa Smith. She said she was no longer able to cope and that her 2 youngest children were dead. Nisa urged Williams to call 911, but instead she video called Jamil first before calling 911. During her conversation with the emergency dispatcher, Williams said she left her 3 children with her cousin that day to babysit until Williams was due to return home from work about 11:30 p.m.
Atlanta 911, operator 7054, what's the emergency?
Yes, ma'am, I have a question, and this is a serious matter. I just left my cousin in the house with my kids. She just left my kids in the house when I came back from work. And my kids, 2 of my kids are dead. What do I gotta do? They dead. She left them dead in the house by themselves.
Okay, ma'am. Where are you now?
I'm in my house. She left my door open. My baby boy, my oldest baby boy, is the only one that's here, only one that's alive. She left them in the house by themselves. She left them in here, and they knocked Can you listen? When I came in, the stove was laying on my youngest son's head, and my other son was laid out on the floor with his brains laid out on the floor. I don't know what to do. I just came home to work from this. Left my baby's dead.
Okay, ma'am. I'm going to get EMS, and I'm going to get police and fire at the location. Can you tell me where you're located?
Ma'am, I can't even talk. This is so serious. I'm so scared. I don't want to get locked up because I was at work.
Okay, ma'am. I understand that you're scared. I completely understand, but I need to get some help out there to you now. Can you tell me where you're located?
I understand that, but can you please help me? Like, can you please tell me, like, I don't want to get locked up because this is not my fault. I had just came home from work.
Yes, ma'am.
I just came home from work.
Okay. Ma'am, the first thing that I need to do is get some help out there to you. I understand that you're upset and you're scared.
They've been here dead. Like, it's no way in the fuck. She left my baby dead.
Okay.
And I don't have no way to reach her.
If you're not sure, if you were at work, ma'am, listen to me. If you were at work while this happened, then the responsibility is going to fall on your sister if that's who you left them with. Okay? Okay, hold on one moment, because I'm going to also get EMS on the line as well, okay?
Yes,
hold
please.
Hold on one moment. Yes, ma'am. Stay on the line with me, though. Hold on one moment for me.
Okay.
Okay, tell me exactly what happened.
When I just came home from work, my babies was stuck in the stove, dead, and I just came home from work. My cousin was babysitting my kids and left my kids dead in my house. Ain't no telling how long they've been in this house.
All right, wait. So you, is your son, is he obviously dead? Is he breathing at all? Can you tell me?
He's dead. He's burnt. Both of my children are dead. Their head is burnt. Their skull is laying on this floor. The stove is, one of my babies is stuck. The stove is cooked over and everything.
All right, Elena, can we get PD started to this location? I'm operator 839.
Yes, we have PD and fire already en route to that location.
All right, thank you so much.
Please, hurry up, please.
All right, ma'am. I'm en route, okay? We're en route.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right.
Williams told the dispatcher that she was expecting to find her cousin there, and she wasn't. Instead, she was met with the most horrific scene. The door was left open, and her two youngest children were dead, 2-year-old Keontae Penn and 1-year-old Jakarta Williams. That she had walked in and the stove was lying on her youngest son, while her other son was lying out with his skull opened. Williams repeatedly expresses her fear about going to jail over her children's deaths. This wasn't her fault. She had just come home from work, trying to support her family, only to discover two of her children dead. And this is an entirely weird statement to make, because I know if this was me, and I would say the vast majority of you out there, but the last thing I'd be thinking about when I've lost my children is whether I'm going to be blamed for it. Not only that, but she's making it very aware that this was all on her cousin. Her cousin was responsible for the children. Her cousin had left the front door open. Now, at the same time, the Atlanta Police Department received a phone call from the children's father, Jamil Penn. Now, even though he and Williams were no longer together, he was in daily contact with his children and was a major influence in their lives, as well as being there to support Williams in any way he could. So you can imagine just how distressed Jamil was in this moment, not entirely sure what was going on. Jamil tells the dispatcher that his baby mama video called him and showed him the horrific scene. When police arrived at the scene, they would later say what they saw was something straight out of a horror movie, something that you would not imagine seeing in your entire life. The paramedics arriving at basically the same time. It was clear that there was nothing anyone could do. Keontae and Jakarta were dead, their heads inside the oven. The scene traumatising first responders, with one saying, "It's beyond comprehension." It's not just the visual scene either. The smell was overwhelming. The smell of burning flesh that was all throughout the apartment. Now, the family felt absolutely fouled by the system. Neighbours to Williams apparently knew she would regularly leave her children home alone. She had attempted suicide by cutting her wrists. The police thought they knew what happened, that Williams was obviously responsible for what happened to the boys. But as we know, they still need to go about their due diligence in investigating, because that can make all the difference in ensuring that justice is done by the victims. Starting with a 911 call, where Williams is more concerned about herself, whether she was going to go to jail. Making sure the dispatcher knew that it was someone else's doing that caused this. Instead of being like every other parent on this planet, being hysterical about seeing their children in such a condition. Wanting help to come and somehow put the babies back together. Focusing on the more important details, like the location, etc. So help could get there as quickly as possible. And then there is this elusive cousin who apparently was babysitting. The issue was, no one knew who Williams was talking about. No such cousin existed in the Williams family. This was an obvious lie. Now, Nisa Smith, the friend who Williams called first on the evening the boys were killed. Nisa would have some troubling information to give investigators. About a month before the deaths, Williams had actually quit her job. The reason given was because she couldn't cope with raising 4 young children as well as working at the same time, which is understandable. I remember being a single parent to 3 young children and working to support us. It was extremely hard, and I was only working part-time, let alone full-time. It's super crazy, and I have complete sympathy for those in that situation. Investigators also spoke to the surviving child, 3-year-old Jamil Jr., and it was actually determined he'd witnessed the deaths of his baby brothers. That it was his mummy who had hurt them. This poor child having to live with this for the rest of his life. Completely heartbreaking to me. October 14, 2017, Lamora Williams was arrested on suspicion of murder. She was detained at Fulton County Jail awaiting further investigation. Police reports from the time state Williams to be very detached when being questioned. And she repeats the same story she gave at the time of the 911 call, that she left her three children with a babysitter, and when she returned, she found two of them dead. It wasn't long before the inconsistencies began being realised. Williams was withholding information, such as not giving the name of the cousin. So police did the only thing they could. They started their search for the unnamed cousin babysitter, but they couldn't find her, because no one had heard of this babysitter before and she didn't exist, a manny-the-nanny situation here. The autopsies were conducted, and what they would reveal would be horrifying. That in fact the two boys had had their heads stuck in the oven that had been tipped over. There were extensive burns across both of their bodies. There was also evidence of asphyxiation. The medical examiner reported that the boys did not have any broken bones or signs of blunt force trauma, but their bodies were damaged by the electric oven. Now, investigators initially believed that the cause of death was because of the boys being burnt. However, the medical examiner theorised this may not be the case. Quote, "These thermal changes appear to be entirely from dry heat, and changes from prolonged exposure to heat. It would require an extensive amount of time to get to this degree. It would have been a slow and extremely agonising death." Unquote. Jamil Penn created a GoFundMe to try and get some financial assistance to support the surviving children. The description on this fundraiser said, "Jamil Penn Jr. and London Williams will never see their brothers again. I will never get to see my two youngest sons again, all because of mental illness. I am not the same person, but I have to stay strong for the kids I have left. Rest easy to my two kings, Keontae and Jakarta." The local community of Atlanta held a vigil in honour of the two boys after news broke about their murders. The community came together to support Jamil Penn and his remaining child. The funeral service for the two murdered boys was entirely donated by Willie Watkins, a local funeral director, who said he felt called to do so by God. Southview Cemetery also donated a burial plot for the boys. According to Willie, the cost of the eulogy by Martin Luther King's great-nephew and a plot in the oldest black cemetery would have been significant. But that his decision to donate to the services was not about money, but about ministry and giving back to the family in their time of need. The funeral was held October 21, 2017, at West Hunter Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia. As the boys could not be viewed, Willie wrapped the casket in pictures of them and their favourite superheroes, the boys' father being able to give them a final kiss before they were taken away by a carriage drawn by white horses. Investigators attempted to recreate the murders in an effort to figure out how what happened happened, also calling on the autopsy reports and the testimonies from those who knew Williams. The issue being, the autopsies weren't able to determine the exact cause of death, just the contributing factors based on the conditions of the remains. That it was possible, the tipped over oven and the burns that were mainly to the boys' heads, that this was all done in an effort to conceal what actually happened. Was there some sort of abuse going on before this? Now, in their investigation, the police were able to determine that things really fell apart after Jamil and William split and he moved out of the family's apartment. And just as Brenda and Tabitha were worried about, this was when William started to neglect the boys, leaving them unattended for hours. These are three boys under the age of 3 years old, not really able to do anything for themselves. The home was void of food. There was nothing for these children to eat. Now, the time of death given to police was between October 12, 2017 at midday to October 13, 2017, 11:30 p.m. when they were discovered. So we're talking about a 36-hour time frame, and this would have a lot to do with their remains being burnt, making it difficult to really narrow down a more definite time of death. Also, the neighbours would later report smelling something strange hours earlier. So essentially, this could have been the baby's bodies cooking for a longer period of time. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors. February 2nd, 2018. A grand jury indicted Williams on various charges, including murder, making false statements, aggravated assault, concealing a death and cruelty to children. The latter charge being filed because William's 3-year-old son was present in the house when his siblings passed away. William's family had concerns that she was capable of committing the murders. Her mother Brenda expressing her thoughts, quote, "My daughter is a sick person if she did what I think she did," unquote. While her sister Tabitha said completely, when asked if she believed Williams could murder her 2 children. Brenda also attempted to visit Williams in hospital, but this request was denied by Williams. Brenda was actually concerned her daughter was a suicide risk and asked the court for there to be 24-hour surveillance on Williams to ensure her safety. She truly believed Williams was a risk to herself. Now, the prosecution argued that Williams was basically overwhelmed by the pressures of being a single mother to 4 children. That after her breakup with Jamil, she just snapped. The prosecution also arguing her actions were premeditated and were driven by frustration and heartache. So while, yes, life is hard, and there was a lot of responsibility heaped upon this woman, she still took her situation out on her children in a planned and calculated manner. And in the eyes of the prosecution, all things being considered, then the highest level of punishment should be given out. The medical examiner testified the children died from thermal injuries due to prolonged exposure to dry heat, all suggesting they had been placed in the oven and the oven switched on. And that alone is enough for premeditation. There are steps there that needed to be done for this to happen. This wasn't an accident. This wasn't a crime of passion type situation. Williams needed to open the oven, place both children inside, shut the oven door, and then turn it on, all suggesting premeditation. The degree of injuries also suggesting the boys were in the oven for some time, during which Williams could have taken them out at any time before they died. Now, when police looked at the apartment the family were living in, they were met with a chaotic environment. The oven was still warm to the touch, meaning it hadn't been long turned off, possibly turned off by Williams around the time she called 911. The jury was shown CCTV footage from the apartment complex, and what this showed was there was no babysitter, no cousin arriving at the home to look after the children, no other individual who entered or exited the apartment. Not until the police arrived. Even more evidence for premeditation because she created the lie. She was trying to cover up what she had done to the children, when there was no other possible way anyone else could have been responsible for their deaths. William's search history was also examined, and in the weeks leading up to the murders, she had searched a number of really concerning phrases. These included, how to deal with a crying toddler, which I mean in isolation isn't bad. I am sure I searched something along those lines when my babies were babies, because sometimes you've tried absolutely everything and your toddler still cries. But then William searched for easiest way to kill children. A neighbour, Shante Williams, also testified, and she said one of the things that she actually struggled with was that Williams would literally scream at her children several times a day. She would hear them crying, but never thought it would ever come to this. And again, it comes down to if you're hearing a neighbour screaming at their kids regularly, if you're hearing children crying regularly outside the normal baby crying, if you see something, if you hear something, say something. Now, as I said, the prosecution wanted the highest possible punishment, so were after a guilty verdict for first-degree murder. But the defence argued a complete opposite version of events. They spent their time focusing in on William's mental health history, which is completely understandable. This was a big factor in what happened here. The defence arguing Lamora Williams suffered from untreated and undiagnosed postpartum depression, which then spiralled into psychosis. And this is something we've discussed before here on the podcast. Off the top of my head, Raina Thiday and De'Asia Watkins to name 2. But when we're talking about postpartum psychosis, this is a break from reality. You become paranoid. You don't know what is real and what isn't. And you act completely different to what would be normal for you. It would be extremely scary and potentially dangerous, not only for yourself but others, like we saw in those other 2 cases. But was this the case with Williams? Because she was of sound mind, you could say, by formulating stories to excuse herself from responsibility. She was able to recognise that there was a consequence for her actions, hence her behaviour on the 911 call. she was able to search for terms about how to murder your own child. She was able to call her friend and Jamil to, well, in Jamil's case, show him what had happened to his beloved babies. But the defence would still argue that Williams wasn't able to distinguish between right and wrong at the time of the crime, going on to say this wasn't premeditated. This was just a tragic result of an acute mental health crisis. The defence brought forth a forensic psychologist, and they testified that Williams suffered from depression, psychosis, and undiagnosed postpartum depression. That Williams was living in a distorted reality and could not tell right from wrong. Again, this doesn't explain why Williams made up the story about the babysitter, because that shows evidence she knew what she did was wrong and tried to blame it on someone else. In the other cases of psychosis we have discussed here, that has not been the case. Someone has spoken to the mother and told her she needed to do A to get B result for their child. And while that doesn't make sense to mentally well people, in that moment, that mother believes that to be the case. It's all incredibly sad and tragic. Evidence was shared with the court that Williams' mother, Brenda, did all she could to get her daughter the help she needed right throughout her life. That she tried to get custody of the children. That she had warned DFCS that this could very well happen. The defence very fairly pointed out there was a lack of treatment and intervention, and this was a contributing factor. November 15, 2024, the verdict was returned. It really isn't surprising here, but the jury found Lamora Williams guilty on all 14 charges. She was sentenced that very same day, and received a life sentence without the possibility of parole, plus an additional 35 years. Jamil had been very vocal throughout the entire trial, because he felt he needed to be the voice for his sons. He said he was absolutely heartbroken, that Keontae and Jakarta were his everything, and now they were gone. Quote, "I have to live with this pain for the rest of my life." Unquote. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the story we discussed today, or any stories we talk about here on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives Podcast on Facebook, like the page so you don't miss an episode, and join the Stolen Lives discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice, and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.